welcome to We Got a Podcast, a podcast normally about Dragon Ball. From Nerve to Casper to Asuka, we're going to cover it all. My name's Ken.
And I'm Doug. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Both of you, dance like you need to win.
We can just synchronize, Randy.
It's true. And I'm all that was left was some bones, Randy.
and Doug?
I said my name already.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow. I was so thrown off by the synchro. Sorry. It was through the roof.
I'm used to going second. And Randy, I'm sorry. That's my fault. I didn't know the order we were doing it in.
Well, speaking of seconds, we're here at the second of the Evangelion rebuild films. Wow. Evangelion Shin Gekijoban Ha, which means, or Evangelion 2.22, or in the dub they say 2.22, so I don't know. Jury's out
really?
On that one. Yeah. Cool. 2.22, you cannot advance. So the Japanese title for this has the Shin Gekijoban Ha, and the Ha kanji can mean two different things. It can mean destroy or break. I believe the official translation of Ha here is break. The same kind of Ha like you would find in Hakai, as in Beerus, God of Destruction and whatnot. It can also mean middle, whereas in the first movie, the kanji Jo meant beginning, start, origin. And this comes from a concept called Jōhaku, in which it's from Japanese court music known as Gagaku, and it's a 5th century, like, royal Japanese music. It's got kind of a haunting sound to it. I was watching some YouTube clips earlier, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I like this, so I stopped. But what's important here is that we go Jōha, so this is the second one, the middle part, and then Q was actually going to be the next one, which was going to be end, the last one. Because remember, originally, these were supposed to be three films that retold Eva, with the last one being different. Of course, we're now well past that.
Yeah,
and then we'll get to Q.
Psych.
Yeah, we'll get Q to Q with the next film. So there's not a whole lot of production notes I have on this one. It's, you know, these rebuilds are already in process. So we were already down this path. We've planned stuff out, and we're now in the second one, which came out in Japanese theaters July 27th, 2009. Original planned release, of course, was in 2008 with a 90-minute runtime. The final version of this film at the 2.22 home release is 112 minutes. Also worth noting is that there was no 2.02 version on DVD. This went straight to Blu-ray, whereas 1.01, when that came out, they were still doing DVD first releases of this kind of stuff.
So. Oh, is that how it is? I forgot that already.
Yeah. So the last one was 1.0, then 1.01, and then the Blu-ray release was 1.11. So pretty much everywhere you'll find these now will be the 1.11, 2.22, 3.33. So there's not a whole lot worth talking about in the changes. There's just some like continuity changes they make between these, or they'll add a scene so that two characters met where they didn't meet before, which is what happens in this one with Kaji specifically. Mm-hmm. So, guys, I'm ready to get right into it with the plot here, if you guys are.
Gosh, dude, let's do it.
Okay. At the Bethany base, located in what was previously the North Pole, because remember, Earth's poles are kind of gone now. Summer all year.
Pick that up. Okay.
The third.
So, yep. As a reminder, Doug and anybody else, Second Impact, when that occurred at the South Pole, threw off Earth's axis. So in Japan, it is perpetually summer because it's constantly always pointed towards the sun, which is the cicadas are constantly going. It's never winter time.
I never realized that.
Yeah, that's why it was so mind blowing seeing the final volume of the manga. The chapter cover is Shinji out in a snowstorm. So it's like, what?
Spoilers for the manga.
Well, it's on the cover. I don't know how to not spoil a cover for you.
So at the North Pole, previously at Bethany Base, the third angel attempts to escape captivity.
Okay. That whole more questions.
Yeah, we just went metaphysical.
Yeah. Which, if you'll remember, the start of the first movie, the first angel that attacked was the fourth. So we're finally drawn back. Who was the third?
Right. So it had been studied and dissected after being retrieved from the permafrost. And Ryoji Kaji, who is at Bethany Base during this, explains that the experiments had been so extensive that only the bones remained of this Eva, or this angel.
That's what he was... I was wondering what he was trying to say. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
it's
of course...
a skeleton with a core, and that's basically it.
Now, we are watching the Japanese version, original language version of this release. And what's cool about when you watch Eva in Japanese is that when someone is supposed to be speaking a language, they are speaking that language. So this is why when you watch like the dub and Shinji will say, they'll set the entry plug to Japanese, and they say they're setting it to Japanese, but clearly, because you're watching it in English, they're setting it to English. So there's like a level of dissonance with that.
Disconnect there, yeah.
But when you watch it in Japanese, the characters who are speaking Japanese are speaking Japanese. The characters who are supposed to be speaking English are speaking English.
I really thought I had like the dub version of the movie, but like, I'm like, oh crap, I downloaded the wrong. I'm watching the wrong version or whatever.
Right.
Went to the settings. I'm like, no, this is Japanese. And then it's like, oh, it's, they're that like hone into their craft. Like they're going to speak English if they have to.
So all this to say, at Bethany Base, we have Ryoji Kaji, who you might know from the original series, voiced by Koichi Yamadera. Again, Spike Spiegel in Cowboy Bebop, Beerus in Dragon Ball. So an accomplished Japanese voice actor speaking English.
Which I doubt he's ever done before in his life.
I can tell you for a fact, he has sang, what is that one song? I See Skies of Blue and Clouds of White.
Oh, really? That song?
He has sang that in English. If you look it up on YouTube, you're going to walk away with different opinions of Yamadera. So just kind of take me at my word and don't go looking it up.
Oh my gosh. I mean, honestly, it's so funny because he's speaking English to these American, I don't know if they're British, right? The people at Bethany Base.
So they are in Europe. It's in Nerve Euro Base.
It wasn't for the subtitles, I wouldn't know what the heck he was trying to say.
So a lot of this stuff that we're pulling from, Doug, as well, as comes from the little booklet that came with the Blu-ray. And if you're watching these on Prime, you're not getting these detailed little data book things that explain everything. So
gotcha.
The scene with Kaji, I had to watch twice because the first time I was so taken aback that I just was not retaining anything he was saying.
The English is rough. I went back to see it again, like if I could understand it without the subtitles, and there's no way. There's no way the other characters would understand what he was saying.
Yeah, and so he's being surrounded by who are definitely people who speak English primarily voicing their characters. And so it's not like you have a whole Japanese cast speaking English. It's everyone speaking fluent English, and then Yamadera comes in, and he does his best.
Does his best.
Yeah.
For the record, I love it.
Yeah.
It's just charming.
It's but just it's like,
he's supposed to be the cool guy, and so like in from a Japanese perspective, this is like a cool moment. Like he's speaking English like a cool guy, and like see you later, good luck. But to the native English speakers, the cool level drops down a little too much.
Yeah, I think so. A little lost in translation.
Yeah.
So Mari Illustrious Makinami of Nerve Zero Branch pilots the Evangelion Provisional Unit 05 in battle with the Angel, which is it's an Ava unit that they didn't really finish.
Yeah.
And so they have sync rate issues with the arms. She's not able to channel enough power. And so really her only option to defeat this Angel is to self-destruct, destroying the Evangelion and the Angel in the process. And she ejects out of there. So she makes it out alive, and then Kaji leaves for Nerve headquarters in Tokyo 3, Japan.
With a briefcase.
What an opening to this that has no roots in the original series.
Yep, this is all new content.
Totally brand new. Remember, the last movie started out with Red Oceans and then a twist on very familiar treading, but this movie's like, nope, all new. Let's go.
It's breaking.
Yeah.
It's breaking it.
It really is.
But it's still not changing anything. This stuff, I guess, not really, but it's. I'm saying this could have happened out of scenes. There's like scenes later on that'd be like, oh, this is different. Like different universe type stuff.
When can we talk a bit about Mari? Do we want to save that for later?
Because I mean, she's the first character that pops up in the movie, right? Yeah.
There's at least one thing that I want to bring up that when I was doing some research, I thought was very interesting. Which was during production of this, you know, they're writing the scripts, they're trying to figure this out. They couldn't nail Mari down character-wise. What do they want to do? They'd end up like, okay, well, now she's absorbing the roles of like Rey or Asuka, and we're diminishing their roles now because we're giving it to this new character, but we don't want to do that. And, you know, trying to figure out a space for her. And what they ended up doing was consulting with an outside person outside of the production to, you know, see if they could take a pass, take a look. What can we do with this character? Give us some ideas.
How do you make a third best waifu?
Exactly. And the person they went to is Yoji Enokido. And if you've listened to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, you know who that dude is. He's one of the main writers of that. So definitely. And that show always kind of feels like if Sailor Moon was made by, you know, Anno, is very Evangelion-esque. So going to this person is like, all right, person who writes a lot of female characters is kind of like in the same sort of tone and of like mystery and all this sort of excitement. So definitely a good pick. And then he had a lot of, you know, was kind of the driving force in what, how her character evolved over time. So it was just a thing. Thought it was interesting. And I wanted to throw it out there while I had the chance.
No, yeah, that is interesting. Because like, how do you nail down a third girl, I guess? Like, you have all the stereotypes of one being a tsundere, another one being like very shy, or not shy. Well, yeah, it's just, you know, but I guess one that's confident, but not cocky is a new one. So that kind of, I mean, that, it's kind of her character, right? Would you say?
Still just a mystery.
She's seems more mature than the others, and seems, I think that's what to I mean be by more in the know than the others.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So there's going to be a lot more to discuss with Mari in specifically the next two movies. Here, they don't really do much with her yet.
Yeah, no. When I first saw this, I'm like, who the heck is this girl? Like, 10 years ago, when I first saw her 10 years ago, I'm like, who the heck is this girl? What is her purpose? Why even bother bringing her into the story? Like, all these questions about her.
Yeah. She's someone who seems like she knows more than she should.
Mm-hmm.
So we just went into some new territory. So let's go back to stuff the series has covered before. Shinji and Gendo meet in front of Yui's empty grave, although it looks a lot different. They're now sticks instead of, I think they were gravestones in the series proper.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I had her name on the grave in the show.
Yeah. Shinji leaves with Misato, and then the seventh angel strikes. Evangelion Unit 2 is deployed from the sky and handily defeats the angel. Unit 2's pilot, Asuka Langley Shikinami, introduces herself to her future classmates and finds herself at odds with Rei. Langley Shikinami.
Different name.
Different name.
What was her... Oh, instead of Langley?
Asuka Langley Soryu was her name Soryu in the TV series. Show. So this is effectively a different character.
No.
Yes. She has a different name.
What an entrance, though. I love her entrance into the series.
Yeah. It's her doing like the dynamic entry kick from Guy from Naruto. Yeah, I love stuff like that. Asuka has always been the hot-blooded character of the group, and it's just always great to see her. And like the theme music for Unit 2, the Unit 2 theme when it hits. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. The whole soundtrack of this is good.
So Kaji reports back to Gendo on the battle at Bethany Base and the construction of Mark 6, and delivers the Key of Nebuchadnezzar to Gendo, which will be the key to human instrumentality. So this is another slight deviation from the series, in which very explicitly a piece of Adam is brought to Gendo. And it's like, it looks like an embryo. Doug, do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You're talking about the original series or this movie?
In the original series.
Yes,
and this one, it's like a spinal, nervous system.
Like a baby. I thought it was a baby skeleton, but yeah, I guess it's a spinal
baby skeleton system.
Yeah.
almost attached to something that, like a needle.
Syringe.
Inject it. Yeah, so it's...
I was trying to like read what it said on the box that it was sitting in, but it had nothing. It was like code 0000 and like name, nothing, I think, but yeah. Because right. In the series, it said straight up like Adam on it, didn't it?
Yes.
Yes. And even named like this is Adam in the TV series.
So in theory, though, this is probably supposed to fulfill the same purpose, even if at this point, maybe we're not entirely sure what we're looking at. We just know it's important and it's probably going to be the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Shinji and Asuka find that they will both be living together at Misato's, much to their dismay. Just retreading some of this stuff. They retrace some stuff again from the original series, but a lot of this is new animation. And one thing I noticed with this movie in particular is how almost off model everything looks.
What do you mean?
Because in the first one, there were so many scenes that adhered directly to the TV series.
Art
style established by the animators who are working on the show. And this one, they don't have that to fall back on as much. So even the scene where Asuka hits Shinji and then they cut to him laying on the ground looks something much more from like Fleekly or like Gurren Lagann, that type of art style. Something very non-Eva. And we'll get to that a lot more in the next movie. But this is like the transitional movie between the two art styles. And it can be strange to look at some points.
Yeah. Especially when we do have some shots like Kaji delivering the Key of Nebuchadnezzar, and a lot of the animation, the drawings are basically, you know, not tracings, but, you know, they're very much exactly what was done in the original TV series.
Are we going to go through the Nebuchadnezzar stuff, the naming and all that kind of stuff later? Is that much? Should I know that already?
Just steeped in religious iconography.
Oh, it's not Morpheus's ship in The Matrix? Okay.
No. Right. Yeah. Named after the same biblical thing, which I don't remember.
But what's the key of the Nebuchadnezzar in this context? Do we know that that is or no?
Well, he tells us it's the key to human instrumentality, and we just take him at his word.
But what that is, I don't think we can really go into until probably the fourth movie. But through deduction, we do know what it is.
Yeah. If I'm watching this movie and going on knowledge of the series, Gendo is going to use this on himself to try and trigger human instrumentality down the road.
But this is not Adam, what we're talking about.
It could be. It's not labeled such.
Wait, is that what the spinal cord is? Is the key to human instrumentality?
Kachi delivers, But we don't exactly what it is yet.
Okay.
We just know it's important. Gendo and Fuyutsuki visit Tabaha Base to survey Mark VI's construction, but are denied permission to land. Of course, this is on the moon, so we have the technology to just go do...
Oh, they were denied entry? I didn't catch that. Okay.
Gendo recognizes that the Mark VI is built on an entirely different understanding, and that its construction must be part of the Dead Sea Scrolls still kept from him by Sele. They observe Kaoru, who turns around and says, "Nice to meet you, Father." Gendo and Fuyutsuki also visit what was previously Antarctica, the site of Second Impact.
Yeah, that was like, what the hell does it mean by father? Like, I was like, what?
So, but I've done some thinking about this. Okay. And if you look at the subtitles, when he says, "Nice to meet you, Father," Father is capitalized. So it is as a name. I would have probably gone a step further to put that name in quotes, because I think he is talking about, like, Father as in Shinji's father.
Oh, okay. Maybe. Like, I mean, because, he does say, like, Tosa, right, which is Japanese for father. So
yeah, but
I took him for his word. But I can see that, like, hey, what's up, father? Okay, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, because that's what Shinji says his father, and that's how.
And because he's so obsessed with Shinji, in a sense that it makes total sense that that's what he's referring to,
calling him what Shinji calls him. Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to interpret this that Gendo is in any way. Gendo had really nothing to do with Kaoru.
Okay. That's what also threw me on. Okay, but that makes so much more sense now. Yeah, I'm glad.
That was Sele,
super interesting that, because Gendo strikes me as the, just disregarding that, but just him peeking out of the plane, I don't feel like Gendo's the kind of guy that, he was like up on that window. Like, he was the seat, I think, beside, and like was up on the window. He wanted to see what was going on. Gendo doesn't seem like the guy that would, like, he would just like be chill and cool and like look to the side of the window. Okay, cool. But no, he was up against that glass, like curious. So, yeah, like, something important shit's going on down there.
It's just him and Fuyutsuki. You know, they've got a special bond. They go back a long ways. He's drop the facade.
I think in a scene later when they're looking at Earth, like, wow, that's really Earth. And, like, you see the red surrounding a lot of the planet. It is that scene that I would picture of Gendo just sitting in the plane, not even caring, not looking really at it. But it was that dynamic that, like, oh, what he saw before was really something he needed to see.
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't need to look at the Second Impact site again. He's seen it.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to worry about
that. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Shinji and his classmates travel to a marine life preservation zone to meet Kaji, and Shinji bonds with his classmates, particularly Rei. Kaji reveals that Misato was present at the site of Second Impact.
This was a fun scene.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think this was also very good because in the TV series, I think it's Magma Diver, where the whole class is going to go on a trip to Okinawa, but the pilots need to stay behind. They don't get to go on the field trip. Yeah. So, like, this is kind of like, oh, we get to go with our friends to, you know, this sort of, you know, facility. Granted, it's, you know, more educational, I would assume, than the beach. But, you know, they're dressed for beach fun and stuff.
It's a trip to the aquarium. I would love a trip to an aquarium.
Right, yeah. And I like that these scenes kind of really hit that Asuka is different here than she used to be, because before, you know, she'd always want to be the center of attention. She'd want to make sure that everybody knows that she's the best and all these things. But here she's a lot more withdrawn. Like, she watches Shinji and Rei interact, and she's like, whatever, I'm okay being by myself, pulls out a Wonder Swan and starts playing video games. Yeah. Like, this is a different Asuka than the one
I didn't get the inkling that, like, oh, she's jealous or like of like their friendship. She's just like, no. I don't care. She's very much, I don't care.
Apathetic to it.
So this whole, like, aquarium thing doesn't happen in the TV series. I'm up to episode 19 of the TV series. I should say that, as you told me, Randy, to catch up to, and I did. And I kept thinking that I remember this scene in the movie, and I thought it also happened in the TV series, but it doesn't, right?
This is totally new.
This is totally new. Obviously, because the whole sea is red, Where in the TV series, it's not. It's at, the water is fine.
Right.
So, wow, okay, that's really cool.
And I think
it's just so funny them like being decontaminated and then contaminated and then decontaminated over and over again.
Pen is having a great time. Yeah. All of these children are just like being tortured. You watch him, he's having a good time, except for like right at the end. He's like passed out and tired, but otherwise he's having a blast.
I think what's so great about this scene is how Shinji uses this to really reach out to Rei.
Mm-hmm.
And the connection between these two characters is so much stronger than it was in the series, especially with Shinji trying to, Shinji's like, hey, I'm making efforts to talk to my dad. I'm trying to reach out this girl who I'm thinking I'm liking, you know?
Yeah. Well, because I was going to say, I don't think it's so much him trying to reach out to Rei. I think it's just him being a good person, that being Shinji, who he is, like, oh, she can't eat. I made food for everyone. She's not going to eat this. Let me give her some soup instead. But it's
Shinji seeking connections with people
rather than just like being
shunned and introverted. Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's being an active participant in the lives of those around him.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Another thing that's important about the stuff about Second Impact is that we see these four kind of ghostly figures who were in the next episode preview at the end of the last movie, identified as Adams plural.
What the fuck does that mean?
well, I have some theory stuff about that. We'll get into
I noticed that one of them was distinct because they had a third eye, but that's all I kind of caught.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into that. I just wanted to bring it up here while we're at it, that we do see them in this movie and that they were introduced at the end of the last one with telling us who they were.
But even though you said like the next episode previews aren't really, they're super vague because they change most of the time, right?
Well, so that's what we said. And then I went back after watching this movie and I went back and rewatched that next episode preview and pretty much everything happens.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This one sticks pretty close to that original plan. It's the one at the end of this movie that is going to be wildly different.
And there will be a lot to discuss at that point. And it's fun to talk about. The eighth angel strikes from space, calculated to land and explode on Nerve headquarters. Units 0, 1, and 2 are deployed to catch the angel before it can crash land.
This is the ball one that then turns into like a butterfly? Okay.
Yeah. You know, I love the scene when the wings are out and the guy, like the pieces come out and they're like doing this wave.
Yeah. They turn into like humanoid type. Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, we're jamming now. Though they successfully work as a team to destroy the angel, it explodes, wiping out a portion of Tokyo 3 and severely incapacitating the three Evas. Gendo congratulates Shinji for his good work.
Now this one I don't know how I felt about, because wasn't in the original, this isn't the moment where Shinji gets praise from his father, right? It's a different angel.
I think it is this one.
It's the same one. Same thing happens where all three are deployed. They have to run to a certain spot to then catch it. Okay, this one just hit a little differently for me. And was Asuka always like, she felt extra cocky and like bratty in this mission? She's like, I can take care of it by myself. But then I think in the TV series, they'd be like, no, we need all three of you to do, like, they explain why we need all three. She's like, oh, okay. But in this one, she kept fighting, like, no, let me do it by myself. I'm like, there's no reason in that, Asuka. You're just being bratty.
We haven't really established that part of her character yet.
Right. So I guess they needed to here. Yeah. But it just felt so, in the original series, it felt like, okay, logical. Like, I can't do it myself. Let me do it myself. Maybe she can't do it herself. This one's like, no, you literally, it's a destination thing. We need to cover a lot of ground.
Logistics are, you can only be in one place at one time.
Remember, this movie does not have the episode, Everybody Dance Like You Want to Win. You know, we never had that one. So Asuka is very much still, I'm here. I just defeated the last angel by myself. I can do this one by myself. And they're like, no. And she resents having to work as part of a team.
Right. Yeah. Again, it just falls back to me enjoying more of the paced out, fleshed out characters of the TV series. But this is what you got to do with this. Was there a scene of her in this movie? There's a scene of her like coming out of the shower and like the cans blocking her nude body. That happens to Shinji in the TV series. Does that happen to her also in the TV series, or is that they switched roles?
So they also did that scene in the first movie with Shinji.
Right, they did that, but then I don't remember that happening in the TV series with Asuka.
Right.
So, oh, okay, that's kind of like a funny fan servicey way to do that, but okay.
Yeah, this movie is horny as hell.
It's super horny. Yeah.
Yeah.
The shots are just egregiously, like, unapologetic about showing her off.
Right. So that night, unable to sleep, Asuka enters Shinji's room and lays beside him. This is a new scene. Mm-hmm. Shinji reveals to Asuka that he isn't sure why he pilots Unit 1, but his father's praise made him happy. In the series, Asuka comes in, and then, of course, then Shinji tries to kiss her and then backs out and turns around. But here we have this close conversation between the two.
Yeah. And, like, you can't tell if she's in and out of sleep consciousness in the TV series, but this one, like you said, she's fully awake.
She's fully awake. She is seeking to make a connection with Shinji.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is a movie everyone's trying to connect.
Yeah. I was just going to say also that, like, the difference is, like, the praise scene where Shinji's father praises him, it happens in front of the other two pilots. Yep. So it kind of means a little more, but in this one, Shinji's still in the unit, in the Ava, and I just like picking out differences and like, I like this one better, but whatever.
The next day, Shinji provides lunch for Rei at school, and she replies, thank you. Moved by him, that night she convinces Gendo to attend a dinner with Shinji and the others.
So sweet.
Rei really questioning having said thank you, and it's her finding that her connection is growing with Shinji.
Well, she did that in the TV series too, didn't she?
Yeah, but it was much more longer and drawn through, and it's that episode where Rei 2 dies. That she's realizing how she's feeling
Rei
about Shinji.
2? What happened to 1? I'm way behind.
Naoko Akagi killed her.
Yeah, I don't know if you were there yet in the TV series. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Oops. Sorry. I mean, you've seen it before. Yeah,
I've seen it before. I still don't get
Ritsuko,
it. Whatever.
Ritsuko's mom killed her when she was like 4 years old.
Yeah, she called
her an old hag and then she strangled her.
Oh, that wasn't a dream? Oh my God. No. That was real?
Yeah, the original Rei was murdered when she was a toddler, basically.
Damn. We'll get into more Rei stuff later on, I guess, when it's more revealed. Because sure. I don't get it, but whatever.
So, Doug, I'm interested to see if you caught this next bit here. Uh-huh. While relaxing on a rooftop, Shinji encounters Mari. His tape player, which had been previously looping between tracks 25 and 26, advances to track 27 and seems to stop functioning correctly.
Oh.
Throughout the TV series and the movies up until this point, it has always looped between tracks 25 and 26. Mari shows up, meets Shinji, and it advances to 27.
But then stops working.
It stops working.
Which is kind of our big inflection point of like, things are changing big time starting now.
Yeah, but why did the music stop working? I'm trying to think of what meaning could be there.
It's an omen.
Yeah, it's an omen, basically.
Oh, okay.
Of that, okay. The loop is broken.
Or
is breaking. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but still play music. Why isn't 27 a track? I don't know. Maybe look into what's into it.
Like you're definitely putting too much real world logic into it.
Yeah. Just the thought of the story writers to either have it no music or music is really throwing me off. Like what was the choice between that? Why did they choose that?
We don't necessarily know that there's no music. Just that it stopped working.
Oh, you said no music. Oh, okay. I thought it stopped working. You said
it stops functioning correctly.
Okay.
And that Shinji makes it very like, huh, what's going on? And then that's the part where Kaji.
Oh, okay. I like that. Them. Okay. I get it now then. That's great.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to voice something. I'm actually got the movie going while we're watching, and I'm just kind of skipping ahead as we're doing parts. And there was a part that we didn't talk about, and I know it's probably minutia as heck, but one thing I wanted to bring up that I question here is we get introduced to the Vatican Treaty. Shortly before Mari shows up, talking about, go ahead. If you have notes, go for it.
I was going to bring that up later, but go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. If you wanted to bring it up later, it was going on just right beforehand, but you're right. It does affect a different scene.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So when I was writing through the plot of this movie, like Randy, I was going through the movie, skipping through, and I was like, okay, how important is this? Does this get brought up later? So if you've watched this and you're like, well, like the whole part with Gendo and Fuyutsuki, I just kind of combined all of their space stuff into one little bit and... So I just tried to, this is a lot of detail in this movie. So we're trying to through it as economically as possible, I guess is what I'm looking for.
Efficient economically. Yeah.
So separately, Rei and Asuka practice cooking for Shinji and Rei's invitations for the dinner party are handed out. Shinji, however, is unaware that Gendo is coming too. And that's something we find out later, but I just lumped it in here.
Mm-hmm. I thought for a minute Gendo was going to go, or whatever car he was in was going to go pick up Shinji as well. Because remember, like they had to do a U-turn because Angel showed up.
I love that U-turn. It's so framed cool. So well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Evangelion Unit 4 and the North American second branch of NERV are vaporized. Though it was an experimental unit testing a new power type, in production notes and stuff, for because this also happens in the original series, it was an S2 engine they were testing with. Everyone doubts that it was an unintended result.
Ooh.
So, sabotage?
Yeah. On whose part?
We don't know as the audience.
Hard to
know.
Say, yeah. Even after all is said and done, it's hard to know.
Okay.
It's the same unnamed dude that does something to Kaji in the TV series. That's who it was.
Kaji is like a quintuple agent, so it's really hard to follow where he's at any given point and who his enemies are at any time. So after the incident, the U.S. is scared, and so they export Evangelion Unit 3 to Japan, and it passes through an electrical storm on the way. I think the electrical storm is a lot more explicit in the TV series. Here they just kind of show it on the horizon of what I guess is New Mexico, which would make sense. Having just watched Oppenheimer, that they would have done something like that in Los Alamos. But
well, that's why I was kind of confused, because the second branch in the U.S. is in Nevada, and that's the one that also gets blown up here.
So but it's then in the desert.
It's after that. Yeah, but then it's after that they show that it's leaving, and it also has a NERF HQ, like the pyramid thing. I'm like, you got two of them in the desert down there? That's weird. Hmm. But okay.
The movie goes to great lengths to make it seem like Toji is doomed.
I love it.
I love it because in the TV series, you know, he was very like depressed when they're hanging out. And then in this one, he's just like, oh, I didn't win on the stick.
That's the best. Yeah. When that happens, you're like,
they're playing it much lighter. And you're like, what are they doing here?
Yeah. Right. I know where this is going.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be happy. Oh, okay.
Because this is a thing where they definitely are playing with your expectations of having seen the series.
Exactly.
The way they focus on Toji in a certain way, you're supposed to be like, oh, you're supposed to have an impending dread of what's about to happen to him. But then they kind of play it for a laugh. And it's just very beautifully unsettling.
Yes.
If you've seen the series.
Because you're like, oh, wait, stuff's changed. Like, if this is, if you're not a really deep fan, if you're just casually watching these movies, this is the first moment you realize something is off. Something is different than the original TV series. This isn't just a retelling.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the Mari stuff, that's still stuff that could be happening out of frame. You know, this is something that's literally changing the world that we know as the TV series goes. It's so great.
And if you haven't seen the TV series, you're like, why are they, what is, this scene is weird. Why is it framed and shot this way? So because of the Vatican Treaty, which is something that states that no country can have more than three Evas at once.
Oh, is that what that is?
Is interesting because there's only seven. Like, as far as we know, their only plan was to make seven of them, which is Unit 0, 1 and 2, which we know, 3, which we come up to now, 4, which is destroyed in Nevada, 5, which was what Mari was piloting at the beginning of the movie, and Mark 6 on the moon. So it's like, why did we have to make this treaty that's like, no country can have more than three? It's like, there's only seven.
Well, like, four thinking, have that I guess. Many.
These things are super weapons, right? So if there are seven, and that means that no country can have more than half of them. No country can even have half.
Right.
So that if something happened and two countries went to war, even in certain scenarios, country could only have three.
No one has a monopoly.
No one has. Yeah, right. So it's just, I think that's the plan. Even with seven in place, once they went down this road, they said like, okay, if we're planning seven, then here's a Vatican treaty to lock this at less than half.
It's true. Forward thinking. Good idea to do that ahead of time rather than after the fact.
As the TV series goes, do we know how the Evas are made? Because that still confuses me too. Like, aren't they arrived from Adam or whatever? And then they put armor on it? Like, or do we just, that's something we don't know and you're just expected to just blow over?
You're just supposed to accept that this one is based on Adam. What does that mean? Don't know. This one is based on Lilith. What does that mean? Don't know. But it's it's an artificial human.
How do they create artificial humans? Like, that's the weird thing.
In the artificial human laboratory in NERF, of course.
God dang it.
Dr. But they Jarose. Just do. Like, man. How do batteries in Android 19 work? Oh, that doesn't work because they have the energy absorbers. What about 8? How does Android 8 work? What's his power source?
The way I like to think of it is that they are not literally made from Adam, but they have tons of data on Adam from Fuyutsuki expeditions and everything. They were studying him way before they even made contact with Adam. So they have all this data on Adam, and they're using whatever findings they had to create the Eva series. And then, of course, they have Lilith to make
but
unit
then
one.
How do they go berserk? the way I see it is with my dumb brain is that there are like creatures that they found and then they're containing their power.
No.
And that's fully, when they go berserk, they're like, oh, we have unleashed a berserkness or whatever.
Fully created and synthetic, but remember they do have human souls in them. So that's what's going berserk.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Is the human soul inside the Ava.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Right. So because of the Vatican Treaty, Unit 2 mm-hmm. must be placed in storage ahead of Unit 3's arrival. Basically, Asuka's out of a job.
Which makes sense because Unit 2 is actually owned by the Euronerve,
yeah.
Not the Japanese one. So they're like, this is the one we're going to lock in. It's not even ours. So
This
one's going to cold storage.
Gendo installs the newly developed dummy plug system in Unit 1. Now, I don't know if you guys noticed on the wall of the dummy plug, it said Golgotha base.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they ever explain where that is or if that's where Unit 3 also came from. So
the only time we get a mention of Golgotha again is in the fourth movie. And it's not a base. So
who knows?
Who knows?
Asuka is chosen as the test pilot for Unit 3. During the activation test, Asuka and Unit 3 are taken over by the Ninth Angel. Shinji refuses to fight Asuka, and Gendo activates the dummy system to annihilate Unit 3 and crush Asuka's entry plug. Though Asuka survives, Ritsuko suspects that Asuka may still be infected.
We kind of skipped over the part right before this where the day that the test is supposed to be happening is the same day that that the dinner is supposed to happen, and it's Unit 3 going berserk that they get that phone call. They got to do the U-turn, and it's like, man, especially if you've seen the rest of these movies, this whole part is extremely heartbreaking because everything after this moment, it's never going to be this again.
Yeah,
it's so sad that they were this close to everybody having a connection and, you know, kind of coming to an understanding. Oh, it's heartbreaking.
But it's the same way in the original series, too. Unit 3 really is the turning point of Ava.
Yeah, absolutely. But this one, it's even worse just because we can see that everybody is like coming together. I mean, when Toji finds out that his sister's getting out of the hospital and everything just before that, Kensuke even says, like, it's great that everything's kind of working out, huh?
I'm
like,
oh, no.
Oh, Kensuke, you ruined it.
Everyone was trying to make connections with each other. Asuka was trying to make connections with Shinji and Misato. Shinji was trying to make connections with Rei and his father. His father was reciprocating that by trying to also make connections with his son and with Rei. And everyone is trying to connect with each other. And then this happens.
Wow. Yeah. So the dummy plug system, much more horrifying in this one versus the TV series, where it's this weird robotic thing that, like, let me just come on down and lock your hands into the control so you don't do anything funny. And let me put a fun visualizer and play some happy music for you while you can hear everything that's happening outside.
Yeah, in the TV series, it just shuts the plug down, right?
It's just like red and he can't see out there. He can just hear like when the crunch of the entry plug is happening. He's like, what's that sound?
Oh, but, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think it was gruesomer in the TV series, though. Like, it just looked a lot cooler because, oh, no, I'm thinking of something else. Never mind.
Either way, it's haunting.
Oh, no, this is it. Like, he looks like it, like animalistic, does it in the TV series. Like, the way its eyes, like, kind of, like, blink and, like, look to the side, you get, like, a side shot of it.
Yeah.
Am I thinking of this right moment?
It starts
devouring.
That doesn't happen in here. That's the next.
I think you're thinking. Yeah, you're thinking of in the TV series when Unit 1 eats the S2 engine.
I guess so. Yeah.
So here it's just punches its skull and its head explodes. You see eyeball fly everywhere and ripping off armor plates and ripping the arm off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not this one that Unit 1 eats. It's an angel leader.
Gotcha.
An enraged Shinji threatens to destroy Nerve headquarters with Unit 1, but the Ava is deactivated, and Shinji exiles himself from Nerve.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Similar to how it was in the TV series, although I do like the visual of him standing on top of headquarters and just, like, stomping on it. Yeah,
which is like selling damage. That these are like kids in these like destruction robots. It's so wild. And then that are just adults that are like controlling it. Like, turn them off. I'm not dealing with this tantrum from this child. Yeah.
Yeah. Kids steeped in like pubescence. And so going through puberty it sucks, you know? And so he's dealing with that too. You have to think, remember when we did that Vegeta character study or whatever it was? And I talked about how Vegeta is actually going through a midlife crisis in the Buu arc. And so you always have to think like the real human effects that characters are going through based on just like your hormones go crazy. Yep.
Where they are in life.
Yeah. So the 10th angel, who resembles Zeriel from the TV series and fulfills a kind of similar role.
They all have names, Doug.
Yeah.
No, but what does it look like?
It's got a face. It's got like, it was this pod thing with a weird sort of angel face. And it had like the paper arms in the TV series. And then.
Gotcha.
Attacks as Shinji is on his way out of Tokyo 3. Mari suits up to pilot Unit 2 and confront the angel in the Geofront as Kaoru suits up on the moon atop Mark 6, acknowledging that, quote, the time has come.
So an interesting thing to point out here is that another difference, I think, from the TV series to this is kind of how the Evas operate. Because in the original TV series, they all have maternal souls of the pilot's mother. That is what they use to synchronize. The only time that we had pilots change is Unit 1 and Unit 0 when Rei and Shinji were switching. Shinji could activate Unit 0, but that's because there's Rei, it's like a Rei soul in there rather than...
Or we suspect.
A mother. Yeah. Like, well, it's likely.
Yeah.
And then Rei couldn't really activate Unit 1 because, a weird input problem with Yui there. But in this one, it seems that that's not a requirement because Mari pilots Unit 5 at the beginning. It explodes. There's nothing left of that Eva at all. And then she can, no problem, pilot Unit 2. We also have Asuka being able to pilot Unit 3. And I don't think there's ever mention of like, we had to change anything in Unit 3. We had to port over the core or whatever from Unit 2. So,
but we do have Misato explain that there is always a backup pilot for each Eva. Since these are super weapons.
How these tests are done or whatever. But that means that more than one person can pilot an Eva without having to... Yeah, I thought
that was the whole point, is that it has to be the mother.
Well, that's why these movies can be fun and different. That's apparently a rule that we don't really have to adhere to, other than, course, what we know.
Then why do they have to be kids still?
Because it's retelling of the show.
Don't. just those things I can't wrap my head around. I'm sorry. Everyone hates me for all this like stupid questions, but it's like...
I still love you.
Thanks, man.
So we're going to get into it in a second, but it still is the case, really, with Eva Unit 1, that it does have to be Shinji.
Yes.
Well, we're about to jump into that. So we just have to assume the Adam Evas are different from the Lilith Eva.
What?
That's just the way it goes. Unit 2 engages the 10th angel to no avail, and Unit 1 begins rejecting the dummy system. Mari activates the Beast, the Evangelion's second beast configuration, in order to become a pure fighting machine. Rei in Unit 0 drives an N2 mine into the angel, causing a massive explosion.
This time it's like a missile rather than just like the little capsule bomb thing, which visually much more cool.
And I love Mari in the beast mode as she's like tearing away, like biting the AT field and shredding it. Yeah.
That's so cool.
So awesome.
I mean, it's ugly. I hate the way that Unit 2 looks in its beast mode, but like it's effective.
Yeah. And I love that it's... So many people didn't even know this was possible, and Ritsuko's like, this is a thing. We don't talk about it very much.
These kids are not supposed to know what this is, but she does.
So from the explosion, a disfigured Unit 2 crash lands into the shelter housing Shinji, and she takes him to see that the 10th angel survived just as it eats Unit 0, allowing it to reach Central Dogma. So the idea being that Central Dogma, again, will reject an angel. Doug, but Unit 0 has clearance to come through to Central Dogma, and because the angel ate Unit 0, it is now giving off the signal of Unit 0, and it can go into Central Dogma.
Gotcha.
Because this changes blood patterns, right?
Because of that. Gotcha.
So it all makes sense.
All sure.
Perfectly sensible stuff.
Uh-huh.
Shinji rushes to Nerve headquarters and insists to Gendo that he pilot the Unit 1 because he is its pilot. Shinji is able to get the angel away from the command center, but Unit 1 runs out of power. Shinji's drive to rescue Rei causes Unit 1 to awaken and goes beyond human limitations. Unit 1 grabs the angel and Shinji reaches out to Rei. And my hair is standing on end in my arms.
Oh, yeah.
Just talking about it. This is when you can tell that Anno, he's been watching Gurren Lagann. You know? Shinji goes full hot-blooded Shimon type Kamina type thing. of like, I'm going to do the impossible, break the unbreakable. That's the attitude of this moment. And I have always loved the end of this movie for just being like, you know what? This is a different Shinji. And we're going to show you how crazy that would, that if Shinji, who can be a little selfish, can try to make connections with people, and we'll show you the outcome of that. Shinji, as remember, he's becoming a god, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he now he knows what he wants.
Okay. Right. He no longer wishy-washy.
Yeah. He's no longer afraid of making connections with people. And so now he's like weaponizing that.
Yeah.
So as Unit 1 transforms into a divine entity, if you guys have anything to say, because I'm about to go through to the end of the movie here. So
there's a thing that I want to come back to when we get to the third movie.
Okay.
That seeing this again, post seeing those two movies, Masato yelling, do it, like, oh, go for it, take what you want.
I latch onto that every time I watch this one too, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, really? Okay, because later we're singing a different tune, yeah. Masato. So.
Yeah, and we do understand that Shinji could hear you, though. So as Unit 1 transforms into a divine entity, it transforms everything around it into energy just to grant Shinji's wishes.
Yeah.
Encouraged by Misato, Shinji crawls towards Rei as Unit 1 reaches into the angel's core, and he successfully pulls her out of the angel, causing it to explode and reform into a giant Rei. Kaji notes that Unit 1 has become the trigger before the others are ready, and that Sele won't take this lying down. As Rei leans into Unit 1 and becomes a new life form, Third Impact begins. And beautiful world.
Acoustic version.
Yeah. Doug, thoughts?
Beautiful.
Questions?
Too many to ask. I don't know. You lost me here.
Instead of regrowing a human arm, getting an AT field arm.
Oh yeah,
is very cool looking.
I can't tell you how many times I've really had to battle with myself to keep myself from purchasing this version of Unit 1.
I was looking at one today. Yeah. Wow. Didn't buy it, but I'm like, oh, I do kind of want it still. It is so cool looking.
Was this movie the one you guys were saying that where they first weaponized AT fields? Like, they didn't really weaponize them in the TV series, just defense, but...
They weaponized it to catch the Eva here, and then again, Shinji weaponizes it into an arm.
Yeah, it's
in
really
awakened
cool.
state, yeah.
Right. We also had a lot of fun things with... This is the 10th angel, this last one, right?
Yeah.
Where it's, like, making, like, big heavy hammers of an AT field that, like, fall and, like, try to crush Unit 2. Like, yeah. That's really cool.
Really cool.
And Shinji, like, holding his arm out and making, like, a weird, like, hexagonal AT field cannon just, like, fires at things and... They just went hog wild on what can an AT field do? I don't know, anything. It's making his wishes come true.
So one cool behind the scenes note here is that originally when they were catching the angel falling from the sky, Eva Unit 1 was supposed to have like the red awakening here. But then Anno thought it was so striking that he was like, no, let's have that at the climax. And so it was supposed to be just a different outcome, different seeing that red happen at a different time, but.
Okay, but not Third Impact.
Right, yeah. It was supposed to be when they catch the angel. And maybe when Shinji gets this stigmata, that's when he goes red. But that's when it was supposed to happen originally. And Anno said, no, I want the red at the end. And I think that was the right call.
Absolutely. It's such a cool new look to it. Like, this is the one time where I'm like, okay, I'm into the extra green accents because we get more, it all turning red. Just kind of, you know, this looks so great.
The angel halo above him, too. And it's just, and the wings and because Misato's the one she saw Second Impact firsthand, so she's the one she recognizes the wings and
you'll notice those atoms that we saw at Second Impact. Doug so astutely pointed out one of them has three eyes. The last shot of Unit 1 here, when it says that Third Impact has started, the end of the world is beginning, Unit 1 now has three red eyes on its head after it's turned completely white.
Become a new life form.
So
we've been listening to Beautiful World and some Eva music. We're seeing some credits go by, and Kaoru descends from space in Mark 6 and penetrates Unit 1 with a spear, deactivating it and apparently halting Third Impact. Quote, the appointed time has come, Shinji Ikari. This time, I'll make you happy, no matter what.
This time, I'll make you happy. This is such a great way to end the movie, too. Like, Third Impact, credits, psych.
Yeah.
So cool.
It was infuriating at the time.
Yeah. Sure. The sound effect of the lance spear piercing through Unit 1. I don't know how to explain it, I don't know. It's very satisfying. There's like that cling, and just all of the impact stuff dissipating. It's like, oh, that's money right there.
We do see the spear earlier in the movie when they're at Tabaha Base, which is spelled out Tagba, but apparently pronounced Tabaha Base.
Good to know, because I was like, he's saying that funny, but it's just me. I'm saying it funny in my mind.
I don't know if you guys have been watching this last season of Bleach, but there is a character in there called, like, the big bad of Bleach is spelled out Y-W-A-C-H, Yuwak, but it's pronounced Yuhabaha. So it's really confusing because they're like, Yuhabaha, and then in the subtitles I see Yuwak, and I'm like, okay, I don't, it's not,
yeah.
You sure? But
I had only read the manga. I'd only read the manga, so I didn't know. I mean, you know. It's tough sometimes, especially like, I don't know, going to fan the flames. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, really upset with the way that they're going with saying that one cat's name
in
the Rebirth.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's
Kashi or something?
Yeah, Ketchi is how you Ketchi. Say that name. But right. They're going Kate Sith. I'm like, yeah, okay.
But they had to go with brand recognition over.
But now well, I'm still curious, same, but if you play it in Japanese, will it be Ketchi?
Oh, I'm absolutely sure it will.
So, did you play in Japanese? You're done.
I could.
But this is an Evangelion podcast.
So, you guys were saying that, like, the Adam that we see or whatever it is, Lilith, has a different mask on it. Does that come into play in this movie as well? Like, are things just out of order? Like, the angels come out of order or what?
I don't think so. It's just...
We just see...
It's different.
At the end, Lilith still up there, but with a different mask. I don't know what the significance of a different mask is, other than just, hey, we're doing something different, and just a signifier of...
Even after watching all these movies, you don't know the significance of it?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought it was going to lead up to, like, I don't know, like, the angel that shows up first in the TV series is now actually Adam, and because of that, it's a chain link of events that change the story in a certain way, but, like, all the angels they face are you said the 10th one, with, like, the paper arms. Didn't that one show up earlier in the series or no? Was it always the 10th?
It was one of the last angels they come across.
The numbers are different.
The numbers are different,
Yeah, but the order is the same.
Why are the numbers different?
Because it's a different movie.
Different timeline.
Continuity.
Yeah.
They've removed some angels. They've combined a few. And they're Right. Like the one that's falling from the sky is kind of a mixture of the one that falls from the sky in the TV series and the one that's orbiting in space that like... fires light down at Unit 2 and really messes up Asuka. You're not there yet, and you're watching the TV show.
Okay.
So, and then I guess kind of also similar with the one that kills Rei 2, in that, like, it absorbs her and everything. So we're kind of condensing and just sort of changing.
It's the remix.
What the... Yeah, exactly. It's a remix.
When did Rei 2 die in the TV series?
Episode 23. You're almost there.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So, all right, strap in, Doug. Because we got to talk about this next episode preview.
Oh, God.
And this is the only point in which I'm going to change the future spoilers rule. And I'm going to tell you none of this stuff happens in the next movie.
Okay. Except for service, right?
We'll
service
get into why that is at a later point. But just know, at some point, this was all originally supposed to be the third movie. Unit 1, locked down with Rei and Shinji. And I'm just going to read the narration, and then I'm going to break out of the narration to tell you some of the important stuff that we're looking at.
Okay.
Unit 1, locked down with Rei and Shinji inside. The fortress city is in ruins. NERV headquarters personnel sequestered. And then we see near third impact, ground zero. So this is the near third impact is going to be a very important term that gets thrown around over the next two movies. So just remember near third impact is what Shinji just triggered.
Yeah.
Because it was halted.
It's not third impact. It's near third impact.
Unit 6 descends into Dogma. So we see Unit 6 here descending down in that same place where Kaoru goes down in episode 24. What's important here is that there is an angel's halo over Mark 6, or now actually being phrased as Unit 6. It's no longer Mark 6.
Mm-hmm.
They're now describing it as Unit 6. Why that's important, I don't really know. But they went the whole movie calling it Mark 6, and now here in the next episode preview, it's Unit 6. The quickening of Unit 8 and its pilot. The children of preordained fate gather at last. All right. So now we see Kaoru dressed like Gendo, so wearing the kind of like commander's uniform at NERV. And then in front of him are four shadows of varying height, kind of like standing in front of where he is. We don't see whose shadows they belong to, but we see... Anyways, what's important here is that for some reason, Kaoru is dressed like Gendo, and There's four shadows, and they have just told us the children of preordained fate gather at last. And then we see Sele's children assembly in session on the screen. Some of this stuff flashes for like two frames, Doug. So I had to like spacebar to catch some of this stuff.
Where again, will none of this will matter because it doesn't happen?
It does matter. It just doesn't happen in the next movie.
It happens. One can assume. We just don't see it.
We will talk about all of this stuff later. It's important. Okay. Just that's all you got to know is that it's important.
Okay.
Where will this story lead us? Where will the story of people trying to survive lead us? And then we see Gendo and Fuyutsuki dressed in rags with a donkey. Rei with three small Reis behind her. Mari in seemingly the same room as the four Reis. And then we see private conference between Mari Makinami Illustrious, which is in a different order than Mari Illustrious Makinami. And I don't think that's important. I'm just noting that that's what we see. And then it's a meeting between her, and then it shows like a name redacted out. And then we see Asuka's like surgery coffin, but there's no one there. And then we see Asuka with an eye patch over her left eye. And then it says, Shinjeki Geki Joban Q, but the letter Q. But remember, Joha Q, remember that beginning, middle, end I was talking about earlier, but it's Q pronounced of the kanji, but here they also adapting it as the letter Q because now it means quickening.
Multiple meanings for things.
Doug, do you know what quickening is? I had to Google
No.
it. So quickening is when during pregnancy, when a mother first feels like the kicking of her fetus.
That's called a quickening?
That's quickening.
Okay.
It is, yeah. So it's like, we'll get into maybe the significance of it later, but so they do
this
like
whole
a
series has a lot to do with maternal stuff, so it doesn't surprise me.
True.
Yeah. They do a lot of different meanings of what Q can mean here. That's the movie, Evangelion 2.22.
It's a wild ride for sure. I was thinking about it today because I was listening to the soundtrack just on a loop at work to get me hyped for this.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, is 2.22 in my top 5 movies of all time? Maybe. Definitely in my top 10. Just movies, man. Like the soundtrack, Shiro Sugisu, he's the man.
Bleach.
Super again. Great music. Yep. There's the Bleach connection. The playing with expectations of people who've seen the TV series. We still got to keep an Ava mystery stuff going on because, you know, that's kind of like what the whole thing is about. If you've seen it before, it's kind of like, well, it's lost that appeal. I don't know. I know everything. Here, it's like we got new stuff. We're sprinkling things in. And it's just it's such a neat experience. Bombastic action, you know, like, I don't know. What more could you want out of a film?
You know, this one has a few more new tracks to it than the first movie did. And it has one of my favorite Ava tracks, which is when the city is waking up and you hear it's like,
good.
For a long time, I had that as my wake up alarm, actually.
That's hilarious.
I was listening to it in the car and I was like, this would actually be pretty good as my wake up alarm.
Yeah, it's nice and chill. It's not startling.
Freaking nerds. Love it.
So
one of my other tracks, another track in there that we have to talk about is Tsubasa o Kudasai, or Please Give Me Wings, which is the vocal track that plays when Shinji is retrieving Rei out of the 10th Angel and near third impact is beginning. This is a popular song from 1971 by the band Akai Tori. Fun fact, its chorus is influenced by Pachelbel's Canon in D, which is, I believe, the song that plays during the credits of Death, Evangelion Death. So it's like, okay, we've got a link to that. It's a, you know, an old-timey song from the 70s. You might have heard it if you watched Dragon Ball, because in Dragon Ball Z Movie 8, Paragus shows up, everybody's out having a good time at a cherry blossom festival, and Kudadin is singing this song at karaoke.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Fun little Dragon Ball connection there.
This movie does a great job with its insert songs of having them be almost like the wrong track to be playing.
Yeah.
Like
similar
the
to Come Sweet
song.
Death from End.
Yeah,
yes.
The children's song that's playing as Unit 1 is tearing through Unit 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mari singing that song in the beginning of the movie. She's on her way to fight an angel.
One, two, punch.
Yeah.
It's like she's having a good old time.
It's great.
So for me, I said this last time. I don't know if I can rank 2.22, 3, and 3.1 or +1. I can't. They're all my babies, right? But Doug, I'm interested to see what what was your over? Because you've got like stone face right now. I can't read you. So I want to know, what did you think of this movie?
I thought it was all right. I want to, it makes me want to see more, if that's the mission of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait until we get out of the realm of stuff that we have seen already in the TV series, because I had that issue where I just compare the two and
we're
always
done.
Enjoy the former. Exactly. So now I'm looking forward to new stuff, and the new scenes in this are really fun. Them going to the aquarium thing and having a nice little lunch and everything was great. Just still a lot of questions, especially towards the end with that whole near third impact thing. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of it's just chalked up to it's God power. So I'm like, I like more concrete stories that like everything happens for a reason. And like everything is, I mean, I'm sure this has that. I'm just too dumb to realize everything. It's not going through my head just yet, but talking through it with you guys is helping a little more.
It is purposefully obfuscating what's really going on.
That's the frustrating thing too, is that you guys know, because you had the knowledge of the two movies coming after this, as well as like, well, let's not get to that point yet. But I'm like, I need to know that to then understand what's happening now. But yeah, I'll have to like rewatch stuff after we go through all that.
The catharsis you are going to have and the next times that we're talking about these movies and you watch them and you understand it, it's going to feel so good, man. Yeah. I don't know how to put it.
This whole time loop thing, and you're saying it's a different Asuka. It doesn't make any sense to me. Even stuff from the TV series don't make sense to me. So it's just, does the city get rebuilt like every day, like after these battles? Like what? Like we don't see the rebuilding. How much detail Anno puts into like the red tape that going through every step of like fighting these things? They never show the aftermath of like rebuilding and all that kind of, but it seems like every time they're having a battle, it's a brand new city.
Oh,
like the city's been rebuilt or everything.
They don't rebuild after the angel falls from the sky. They evacuate the city, and then it's a very select few stay behind.
Right. And so like the building's going down into, I guess, is Dogmas, or is that what the area's called?
Into the Geofront.
Yeah.
Into the Geofront. What's are people in those buildings as it's like going down and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there are shelters that I know that they go into. I'm not sure if it's those buildings specifically.
Are those like office buildings, or are they just
that was
housing
always my
buildings?
Read.
Yeah. I mean, this is the new capital, basically. Yeah. So
right.
It's a huge city. There's so many people here.
But sometimes
at the start.
They don't descend it at soon enough, and like it gets destroyed up above in the.
Not all of the buildings retract. Okay. You can see that in the TV series.
Well, the one that don't retract, Jesus.
Well, yeah, that's why they have the shelters that you would go to, and a lot of the shelters I think are you take a train straight down to the bottom of the Geofront.
I noticed that,
because.
Yeah.
So you're further away. So I don't think they're in the buildings then specifically.
So that Geofront isn't a secret to the population.
No. Cause
like
basically, well, all of the people that are kind of in the city work for NERV, and they all, that's their job. They all work down there. So all of the parents are like, yeah, that's what it is. You know?
Okay. Speaking of then, I don't understand the whole Shinji's classmates are all motherless. Or like all
that's
all
a TV series thing.
All potential pilots. No, I think they said it in this one too. All of Shinji's are potential pilots. Oh no, maybe it is just a TV series thing. But they said it was just they're all potential pilots. That doesn't make any sense to me, because then doesn't the mother's soul have to be in the Ava unit? And then does that mean they kill the mother? They have the mother's soul on hand to then put into the Ava unit.
Yes. They have it on hand. Yeah.
Are you not kidding? You're that seriously
no,
what it is?
That's serious.
What the fuck?
Nerf is not
they're
a
not,
good place.
They're not killing these mothers, right? These mothers
they're already dead.
Happen to die, and they have their soul somehow.
Somehow they're able to trap them.
Okay, that doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter. They just have them.
Yeah.
I hate those kind of things. I'm like, you gotta show me how, why.
We'd be here for 7 years if they had to show you all of the ins and outs of like, okay, well, here's how the internet connection this far down works.
Yeah.
So that way they can communicate. Like, it's just got to accept it and be like, all right, sure. You can only go so far before you're
it's
asking
a little
for
different than
technical
having a soul
manuals.
And then wiring internet. Like, yeah, no, we have this soul on hand.
I was going for hyperbole. But yeah, a thing that they're just not going to show us is like, here's the soul catching net that we used to catch. Like when little Timmy's mom died, we ran over there like, don't worry.
Yeah.
We'll put her in a robot for later.
I need that. I don't enjoy stories unless they have that.
So let's get into back to the time loop theory a little bit here and some of the additional clues that might have been given and some debunked.
You blew my mind with that track 27. So that's
yeah.
cool.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of the big things, again, yeah, is that it loops the whole TV series and the first movie. And then here, Mari comes and we break and we're 27 going forward. Also, 26 episodes of the TV anime, Doug. So,
wow.
So that's the significance there as well.
They thought about it. It's those things that make me so pissed off. Everything is so meticulously detailed, but then other things are like, nah, don't worry about it. Soul Catching Net. I hate that.
I'm
so
convinced much. That they do have answers for everything. They just haven't. Remember, you had to play PS2 game to get the lore about the aliens.
Oh, God.
The first ancestral race. So one theory that's out the window is the Red Sea being somehow left over from End of Evo. They explicitly state that the sea changed because of Second Impact. Mm-hmm. So we know that in this timeline, that's the case of that. But the new wrinkle is, I think, the four atoms. And especially when you pair that with Kaoru coming out of the fifth coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And
so atoms, plural, is still the first angel.
Yeah.
So it's weird, but four things get to be number one, but that's just how it is.
I still don't understand how they classified one of the Evas as an angel so quickly because and astutely.
You mean when Unit 3 gets taken over?
Yeah.
So there's, I don't know the science of it. Angels have blood patterns and they're by color. And angels specifically are blue. Things that are not angels are not blue. And when they can scan, they see that Unit 3 is there. They'll be like, oh, it's blue. That means it's an angel. Okay. Reclassify it as an angel, guys.
I'll take even as simple as that. They have the blood pattern. They can tell. It's not okay. Because otherwise, it's just like, why don't they just classify it as a berserk? Why? Oh, this is an angel. What if I had a bad day one day and I was got really mad? Oh, he's an angel. Like that doesn't that's what it looked like to me.
Right.
But I like your explanation of it's the blood pattern that they have. Okay. So they have all this data on the angel, so of course they would have. Okay.
As far as the atoms situation, I think there's a lot of importance in there being the four atoms plus the fifth Kaoru coming out of the fifth coffin. Is this the fifth time loop that we've been through? Was the TV series the first one?
But when does a time loop? When does the time loop?
I've been thinking about this a lot, but you just have to think that there's some sort of quantum energy thing that is happening because of the angels that is beyond our understanding, and time is looping back somewhere, but with a different.
Because I feel like the Red Sea could be a continuation of End of Eva, just because it's. I know they say it's because it's Second Impact, but it's. To their knowledge, because of Second Impact, but actually because, because it's the End of Eva loop or something. I feel like they could work that out.
See, I want to do some additional research, but the last time I was looking up some stuff, I was kind of under the assumption that there is a time loop, but it is rebuild specific in that previous loops are not the TV series, are not the manga. We are in like the fifth loop of something. And the previous four did happen, but we don't know what they are. It could be something similar, but...
I would have agreed with you, but there is something in the fourth movie...
Great.
...in which I would... So we will... No future spoilers, but there's something that I feel is quite explicit, and we'll get to that.
I'm excited to get to that.
I like it more thinking that the TV series is a prior one, too.
I would like that, too. But it's just easier to kind of digest. It's like, okay, this is the fifth loop. Stuff happened before, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the TV series. But I'm excited to see this evidence and things that you know do that, because I have seen that movie a couple of times, but I don't remember everything, and I'll forget stuff.
One thing that I always wanted to bring back up again, because I wasn't on the End of Eva podcast, would you guys explain the ending of Eva where like Shinji starts choking Asuka?
Yeah,
and then she says gross. I think that's a whole loop back to how the movie began and how he jizzed. In front of her or whatever. That's kind of what she was referring to as gross. I think Shinji's been there for a long time. And Asuka's been there like paralyzed, like just she can't move or whatever. And Shinji's done some shit because he doesn't give a fuck anymore that we don't even want to see, but he's done it. She's aware of it. And that's why she says gross. That's my, off the wall.
He was choking her, and we do know what he's done with that hand before.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, just like he think of someone who's just been desolate and no one's around. Like, he's so bored. He's probably done bad stuff to her. And then choking her kind of thing. And just like, just to feel something.
My read on it was that it was more of a, like, she calls him pathetic earlier in the movie. And then he's choking her and then he starts crying and he stops. And she's just like, ugh.
This sucks. She says, I had to come back to this.
Is the translation wrong, though? Did she not say gross? Because that implies a lot
more. No, that's correct.
Yeah, I think it's more of a, he is, I don't think it's necessarily inspired by anything he might have done on this adventure you're imagining,
like,
but.
I just mean, like, I really like bookends, like how it's movie starts and how it ends. Like, I like that they're, when stories do that, when they're very parallel, and I feel like that is intentionally parallel.
Possibly. I mean,
and the only way it can be parallel is the worst way imaginable. So it's like weird to think about. But
of the mission statement of End of Eva was to put you off balance. So
could be her saying,
well, they've done it,
saying that as the audience, because this is the very end and you've gone through some stuff. And she just says, man, I feel gross after this. Yeah. Like, maybe you sitting there in the theater, like, I feel bad about but this.
What's most important about this is that we're still talking about it. You know, and it's still for interpretation. I love that kind of stuff.
Crazy. Right.
So I think we have some listener input here that we can address. Randy, I don't know if you have the tweet up. I do.
I do. I indeedly do.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and get us started here with from Genryusai Rider, who says # ceasefire now. Yes. A definite improvement over 1.11, whereas I feel like the intentions of the rebuild movies start to show itself here. Whilst I do think it's a bit gratuitous with fan service, I do think it's the most fun and easy watch of the four movies, also home to some of Sugisu's best work.
Who's that?
The composer.
Who's the composer?
Gotcha.
I think 2.22 is quintessential Evangelion. Like, it's got everything you want.
It's right in the middle.
Exactly. And, you know, it's easy to get into, like they said, you know, if you jumped in, if you're like, you know what, I'm going to watch a little bit of Eva. Let me just put in, I don't know, 3.33. It's like, oh, oof, there's a lot I got to understand and wrap my head around and like, okay, where are we here and all this? Okay, gotcha. It's the easiest to jump into, digest, but, you know, also just like it's got everything you could want out of something called Evangelion.
Got some old stuff, got some new stuff. It's great. It is funny how I noticed immediately that, like, oh, Asuka's not panning over, I forget his name, Kaji?
Kaji.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, like, as gratuitously as she is in the TV series, like, oh, they're cutting back on that. And then they just completely just show her at every angle.
She has no relation to Kaji.
Yeah, I don't think they know each other. I don't think they talk to each other.
Because in the original, like, she's with him, like,
They're both from Germany.
Germany. Okay, yeah. Yeah, now that you mention it, they don't ever meet in this movie. Mm. So it was totally unnecessary for them to have that. Okay.
Well, yeah. Totally different character.
Exactly. I'll take this one from Jacob Sawyer. It says, this is probably my favorite of the next three. I really like the character growth you see in this movie. Also, it looks great. Mari is great.
It's interesting you settle in on Mari here because I feel like she was pretty disliked for a while.
I got that vibe that back then too. And as someone seeing for the first time back then, I remember like, who is this girl? Why does she matter? She's nothing.
See, she doesn't have a lot of consequence in the movie, I don't think, because, you know, we get to see her in Unit 5 and then she's in Unit 2 and she doesn't win or anything. But there's enough there for you to be interested in, like, what's her mystery? What's her deal? Who does she work for? Because, like, granted, she's a pilot and she's at NERF, but she's always on the phone with some other mysterious organization. She's
entering countries covertly.
Yeah, she's able to unfreeze Unit 2 on her own and take it out of, you know, deep sleep. So it's
she knows about beast mode.
Yeah. So
did Asuka even know about beast mode? You said Ritsuko really just knew about beast mode.
Right. Wow. I mean, she made the Evas, so that makes sense. But I just think that I want to put it out here. I always loved Mari, so I don't understand the hate at all.
I'm not anti-Mari. I'm just saying, like, the sentiment I have seen online over the past 11 years or however long.
I feel you. I just wanted to put it out there on the record that I always loved this person.
Because it's always been a battle of, like, is it Rei or Asuka? Who's the better girl? And then some, like, random third girl shows up at the party, like, you didn't earn any of this. Get out of here. Like, that's, I'm sure, what everyone's sentimentality.
Yeah, it's tough to be a new character showing up on an established thing. Like, when I joined, we got a podcast. You know, I was the Mari of the group.
Everyone hated you.
Really, yeah.
Your pigtails were cute, though. I did like those.
Pigtails. Well, they had to go. Wait till you see my white uniform and rainbow accent. It's gonna be cool.
Yeah. You know, she's just such an interesting character because from the get-go, she is not tortured by this fate of hers of having to ride this robot. She's just having a good time. She's
every child seems to have issues, but she doesn't. She's good.
She's like, that was a little more brutal than they told me, but like, I'm alive, so that's all good. very happy-go-lucky.
Also important that was her first time interfacing with an Ava.
Yes.
Even though she piloting seems it. To know, so yeah, piloting an Ava, even though she seems to know a whole lot more than
I think I just got flash forwards should. Of what happens with her in other movies. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm. No future spoilers.
It just rushed me.
Yeah.
Like
the Ratatouille moment.
Like Yagami getting the Death Note again. Like,
you touched the Dead Sea Scrolls and remembered.
Yeah. That's what it was.
So Austin, called Turn Text Austin, writes in again and says, I think 2.22 is a definite step up from 1.11, primarily in the character moments that 1.11 is lacking. Agreed. The wild card of Mari immediately sets the tone that this is different from the TV anime, and I think she was a fun addition overall to the film series.
Turn Text Austin, you're one of the good people. Just wanted to say that. You knew from the beginning Mari's great.
Well, I think it's easy to say that in retrospect, having seen all of these movies. But definitely understand the frustration that some people had in the beginning. This new girl coming in, mucking it all up. You know, it's like, you guys remember in Tenchi in Tokyo when Sakuya showed up and you're like, who's this Sakuya? She's kissing Tenchi. Get out of here. You know,
nobody wants you.
They're doing everything they can to make the audience kind of like endear her. Like they got her in a short schoolgirl outfit skirt. They got her in glasses. They got big old boobies.
Yeah.
Like it's true. Everything.
Yes. So next time, you might think we're going straight into 3.33 next time, which we're not.
We're not?
We're not. Nope. So the holidays are coming up, and so we're going to kind of take this as a... We're not taking a break.
No.
But this next one's going to be a little bit shorter. On the 3.0 plus 1.01 DVD or Blu-ray, there are two specials. There is one called Ava 3.0 minus 46H, and there is Ava 3.0 minus 120 Min.
I believe that's correct.
Which Kingdom is based Hearts, on
what
a,
is going on?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so we are in full 352 over 8 days or whatever that was called.
So close. That's okay.
What these two are is they are OVAs, Randy. One based on a manga and one totally original, which. Give you some of the moments leading up to the beginning scene of 3.33.
Wow. Oh, so, which is probably like desperately needed.
I wouldn't say that, but chronologically, we're going to watch this in story chronological order. Just because the way we're covering it, it doesn't make sense to talk about this later. So
yeah. Even though it was packaged with the fourth movie, it takes place before the third one. So we're going to talk about it before the third one.
I'm sure I haven't seen this before then.
Yeah.
Me neither.
Me neither.
Really? Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay, cool.
Every time I've been in the wiki trying to do some research, I'm like, okay, yeah, I really want to know more about that. And I start paging down and then they start talking about these specials. I'm like, nope, I don't want to know. I haven't seen it because the manga thing for, I think it's minus 120.
Yeah.
Was a manga beforehand. I think it came out around 3.0 coming out. But we didn't get it over here. And then now they've basically made it like a motion comic, giving the characters voices and stuff for it. So that'll be interesting to do. And then the negative 46H is something completely all new. And I'm excited. I tried to be as spoiler free as could be. And I'm excited to watch these and talk about that with you guys.
I know very vaguely what happens, especially in 120 Min, because it's not really that much, but 46H, I briefly looked at a summary and I'm like, I don't even know what any of this means. And so I clicked out. So we're going to be watching those again. If you have 3.0 plus 1.01 Blu-ray, or is it just 1.11 Blu-ray?
It's 1.01, I believe.
Okay.
I just call it Thrice Upon a Time. It's so much easier to call it that.
The fourth rebuild movie, it is on that Blu-ray. If you don't have that, you know what to do. Set sail. Okay. But yeah, I would
be
also
like Asuka, put on that eye patch.
You know, it's really hard to recommend people be like, oh, just go buy these movies. Because currently you can purchase 2.22, 3.33, and the fourth one, but 1.11 is way out of print.
No way, really?
Mm-hmm.
With how famous and iconic this series is, the first one is gone.
So, Doug, the reason that happened is something we're going to get into in the 3.33 episode, because Funimation no longer has the rights. So anything that's still out there is the final printing of that release of the movies.
If you come across it, get it while you can, because who knows? That could be the last one they've got.
They recently have been on sale on Amazon. I saw 3.33 at least. So. But G-Kids.
Twice Upon a Time is new by G-Kids. Yeah. You're right. And so that one's very easy to get and in print.
And G-Kids did the original series. So presumably they're going to do 1.11, 2.22, 3.33. But I mean, there's no telling for sure how that's going to get all packaged together. So if you can find 1.11 for cheap, definitely get it. Or if you can even find it for about MSRP, get it. Because just who knows how long it's going to take for those to come out otherwise. But
my collector vibes are tingling.
So, like we said, the things we're about to watch next are specific to the fourth rebuild movie Blu-ray. So that is what you will need to watch these. Otherwise, take care of business yourself. You know what to do. You found YouTube or you found Spotify. Surely you've been to other websites. You can figure it out. And I think that about brings us to a close for this one, guys, unless you had anything else you would like to add.
No.
Okay.
No.
Nothing in particular other than let's just rewind, start from the beginning, talk about things again a second time.
Let's loop it.
Good luck.
Let's time loop it. Damn it. That's going to be my sign off.
Well, you can still do it. You can still do it.
Okay. All right.
Just play the clip.
Randy, where can people find you online?
You can find me on most places at Saber_Breaker.
All right. And Doug, where can people find you?
Find me at Jabaz Doug on most places.
Most places. All right. You can find me at Detective X, and that's just where you're going to find me. And guys, remember, this is an Evangelion podcast, but our main podcast, we are covering Dragon Ball GT, reviewing that series, and we've crossed the Rubicon on that.
Oh, my God, yeah. You sure have.
So if you really want to see us talk, trying to desperately enjoy something that does not want us to enjoy it, check out our Dragon Ball GT review. Definitely stark difference from this show.
Can't wait to go back to gambling raccoons where things make sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So as always, guys, thanks for watching, and we'll catch you matinator.
Good luck. Yeah.